now, the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
Ah, yes, indeed. It is a Friday. Always look forward to it and look forward to meeting and seeing Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Good morning.
Chilly.
Just to say the least.
Oh, come on, you know. But it is chilly. We had a November where you could have been outside almost every day. There was no cold weather in November. We're now into December. A little bit of cold weather is nice.
Okay.
And it wouldn't be the holiday season if it wasn't cold weather. You're supposed to bundle up.
And the city looks great all dressed
shiver
up.
Shiver a little bit.
All dressed up
yeah,
for Christmas.
And people, yeah. You know, it's different with all the clothes, the layers of clothes and the earmuffs and
see
the scarves and you see your breath. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
I sort of like that.
It's what it's all
you know,
about.
My mother, I've always tried to say, would you like to move to a warmer climate? She's, you know, almost 97 years old. She likes the four seasons. She likes going out in the cold weather and then in the hot weather. I do too.
And the snowstorms in Boston.
They get more snow there than they do here.
Absolutely
yeah.
So. Okay, let's get down to business here. And where should we start? I'm gonna ask you about this the gun thing that you seem to be making some progress here, some headway.
We are making progress. Look, we're not trying to end people's right to bear arms, the Second Amendment. We're not trying to take away hunters' rights to go hunting. If you want to do that, that's fine. What we're trying to do is to get illegal guns off the streets of the big cities.
And you have sued specific
we
dealers?
We have done a number of things. We have sued First 15 and now another group, same size, of dealers, because while 10% or so of the guns come from New York dealers, and we're going after those dealers, the problem with illegal guns for every mayor is that people buy them in a state with less restrictive laws or maybe less scrupulous, a handful of less scrupulous dealers, and they just you can take them from one state to another. It is also true that only like 1% of the dealers in this country violate the law, and they're the ones we're going after. They are selling guns that they know or have every reason to believe are going to be used in committing crimes. And people that are against this effort, you know, if they'd stop and think and say, wait a second, I don't want to have to worry about walking down the street and have somebody blowing me away. And somebody else, another gun advocate says, well, carry a gun. Carrying a gun is a good way is probably to
get shot.
Sure. I mean, you know, if people have guns at home and the statistics say, unfortunately, a lot of times these guns are found by children and the kids had terrible accidents or domestic violence. The number of times you have to use it to defend yourself is really very small. But if people want to have guns, get a permit. This is only against illegal guns. And we've actually made some progress. We've got a bunch of dealers who we sued and half a dozen have settled already where they're just going to have a monitor. They pay a small fine. They're going to have a monitor to make sure they don't do it again. We're not trying to hurt them. We're just trying to keep them.
Who will do the monitoring?
There's a special master being appointed by the court, and he can have or she can have, I think it's a him, cameras and that sort of thing. They look at the records and making sure that they follow the law. But, you know, everybody says there's enough laws on the books and, you know, don't go after guns. Go after people that break the law. That's what we're doing. We're going after people that break the law. In New York State, we've got a law passed that now is 3.5 year minimum mandatory sentence if you get caught carrying a loaded gun without a license. We got the city council to pass 4-odd laws that help us fight illegal guns. We've got there were 3 bills before the federal House of Representatives that were just terrible bills, would have prevented police from doing their job. We got those stopped. So, you know, we are making progress in terms of fighting illegal guns.
And the support from around the country from mayors like yourself.
You know, we've gone from 15 mayors to 115 mayors, something like that. And, you know, half of them are from west of the Mississippi. Half of them are south of the Mason-Dixon line. A lot of them from states where a lot of people carry guns. That's okay. I have no problems with people carrying guns. You just don't want people with long criminal records to be able to buy guns or young kids to buy guns. And if you see, you know, listen, in this city.
I saw a DJ shot last night.
I couldn't believe that in the paper. I mean, this is craziness. In this city, we have continued to bring crime down. We brought crime down in virtually every category by 20-25%. This year, murders, while still way down from where they were 5 years ago and way, way, way down from where they were 15 years ago or a little more than that, 20 years ago, they've crept up a little bit. And it's just too many guns. You saw somebody shot the other day with an illegal gun. We got to get guns out of the hands of criminals.
All right, we'll keep after.
And if you just talk about it, Everybody says, you know, do these things. But then when you try to do them, whether it's fighting obesity or anything else, people say, that's not what I wanted to do. You got to do something. That's what we're all about.
Speaking of guns, what's the latest on the Sean Bell investigation?
The district attorney is doing his investigation. And, I've always thought Dick Brown's a very qualified, capable, honest guy. And the fact that you don't see a lot of stuff leaked into the papers says that he's probably doing a good job. He's not out showboating. He's out to give, to do a fair,
people are showing patience, most of them.
Yeah, most I think that's – look, this is a terrible tragedy. Somebody's dead. The police department, Ray Kelly, put together a group to review procedures. We don't know at this point whether we could have better procedures. We don't know whether the procedures are adequate or whether people just weren't following them. Or another possibility, it may be the procedures are adequate and they were following them, and just they did nothing wrong. I mean, that's – you can't prejudge these things. I've said before, there's just too much crime. And we've got to get guns off the streets, and we got to keep training our police and keep helping them do a have better management, do a better job. It's a never-ending battle. But I don't want to go prejudge what happened. And this is just one event. There are, every day, our police officers have to make life and death decisions about your safety and about theirs. It ain't an easy job.
How about the rumble down in Union Square, these kids, one kid stabbed to death?
Teenage violence. Ray Kelly seems to think this was something that had been, confrontation, deliberate, maybe gang-related. We don't have a lot of gang stuff in the city, but we certainly have to make sure we don't get it and go after the little bit that there is. And, some kid's not going to go home. He's dead.
It's just insane.
The good news is that the city is phenomenally safe, and the likelihood of that happening is very small. But that puts even more pressure on us, John, because if you have one event, you have to go after it even more maybe than if it was commonplace, people would shrug their shoulders. We don't ever want it to become commonplace again.
I was surprised on this rumble down between the two schools, Washington Irving and Brooklyn Science, that one of the principals said that we don't have problems in the schools. That we keep the street, I think were his words, we keep the street on the street, but when it goes back to the street, I don't have a lot I can do.
Well, keep in mind, the principal's job is to make sure that in the school is safe.
Correct.
And if they do that, then we've got part of the problem solved. It is the police department's job and your job and my job as people who have eyes and ears and can pick up the phone to make sure that the streets are safe. And fundamentally, this city is very safe. Kids going to and from school almost never get assaulted, but it does happen. And when it happens, we're going to take this so seriously. It'll get a lot of press because it's so unusual. If it was commonplace, wouldn't be the headlines.
All right. Mayor Michael Bloomberg here this morning at 77 WABC. He will stay around. Hope you do too. We're coming right back. 77 WABC. John Gambling, Mayor Michael Bloomberg here at 77 WABC, our Friday get together yesterday. I spent a few minutes with John Heilman from New York Magazine. His cover story of you running for president, I thought was fascinating. Had a great conversation with him, and he, like me, thinks it's a very good idea.
Well, I don't know that I do, but I did send a copy up to my mother. When I talked to her last night, she had not received it yet, or if she did, she didn't mention it.
He actually, as you read, he said some very nice things about you.
It was very nice. So you always like to have nice things.
And I understand at your party at Gracie Mansion last night, There was a song about running.
Joking about that.
It wasn't joking, I don't believe, was it?
All kidding aside, I think I've got the greatest job in government because New York is such a bellwether for the rest of the country and the world. When you do something, the impact is national. Our smoking ban, Ireland and Italy and now France banned smoking the whole country. I mean, who would have ever figured that because of something? It's a chance to really make a difference. You've got 8.2 million people to complain and try to juggle all the things they want. We've got a press that watches you every minute, so you got to really be on your toes. 8 years will be enough, incidentally. I'll be looking forward to after that. I've got my next career mapped out. But, I saw one of the newspapers had – there was an editorial today that particularly annoyed me in one of the newspapers that said, if you're going to run, you shouldn't be fighting the gun lobby. And,
what?
You know, I'm not here to run. I'm here to do a good job and to do what I think is right. Now, not everybody will agree with me as to what I think is right.
No, but that's precisely the manner which I think has endeared you to so many people.
Well, all of those are here. Well, although I did have breakfast, Ted's story. I had breakfast this morning with this three people who are here from London on a trying to bring some business to New York and do some filming here. And they said, they took a cab to Gracie Mansion where I had the breakfast. And they said, the cab driver just loves you. I said, well, thank you very much. Nice to hear that. You know, not all cab drivers do.
That was the case of the mayor of London, though, Mr. Livingstone.
That was their
take. Exactly.
That was their take, too. Although, you know, it's a listen. Making decisions when you're an executive is a lot harder than saying things when you're in the legislature. That's the real difference between executive jobs and legislative jobs. And the reason executives, many of them, don't go on to higher office because you have to make decisions and people know where you stand. Whereas legislators, and some, not all, but some of them try to have it both ways. They, you know, vote for the war but don't vote to fund it. And, you know, it's that kind of hypocrisy, duplicity, whatever you want to call it. Whereas the mayor of the city of New York, you know where he stands. You may not like it, but he doesn't have a chance. And whether it's me or any of my predecessors or my successors.
Group of businessmen put out a report about congestion pricing tolls, which you and I have talked about.
Yep.
London, speaking of Livingstone,
yep.
London does it.
Yep.
You in or out on this?
You know, I think... let me have it both ways, okay?
Okay,
after having said not,
but
I'll tell you why.
Decisions, right.
I think we should look at it. I think that the comparabilities with London aren't exact. Things are different in London in terms of who drives than who drives here. I think the politics here, because we aren't a city that can enact a law like that ourselves, it would have to be Albany that enacts a law.
No way they're going to do that.
And that's exactly right, because the ways congestion pricing typically works is you give a break, maybe 100% or just some kind of discount to those who live in the city, and you fundamentally charge those from outside the city to come in. But that's what's called a commuter tax in our system here in New York. And I got a lot of things to worry about. You know, I'd like to get more charter schools, for example, from Albany, the right to have more charter schools. Very important to our children, very important to our future. That's a battle I have a chance of winning. Congestion pricing, commuter tax, you probably don't have a chance of winning. So, yeah, it's a good idea. Whether it would work here or not, I'm not 100% convinced. We do have a lot of congestion, but, you know, there's no easy answer. People say, well, have all deliveries at night. Somebody wrote me a very thoughtful email the other day.
It's been talked about for generations.
The screams of people at night who have the noise of the trucks and the stores who then have to stay open to accept deliveries, and people who drive around, they say, now at least at night you can move around the city. You won't be able to move around the city because there are all the trucks. And some things have to be delivered on time when they're needed or perishable and that sort of thing. So you can't do it with everything. Collecting the trash. Nobody likes to have big garbage trucks go down their street during the day. Ties up traffic. You try doing it at night, and the screams, they don't stop. So there's no easy answers to any of these things. Then one suggestion I keep having for people, for yourself, take mass transit.
I mean, the ridership of the subways is up significantly.
Because the subways, look, when I came to New York in 1966, they were dangerous, they were unreliable, they were filthy. They weren't air-conditioned in the summer. Today, these subways, they may not be perfect, but they're a heck of a lot better. And people, you know, somebody said to me recently on the subway, do you like taking the subway? No, I don't like taking the subway. It's the best ways to get to where you want to go quickly and efficiently. And particularly during something like the month of December when all the streets are chock-a-block full of traffic. And, you know, traffic's good in the sense that it means a lot of economic activity. But why anybody tries to drive from downtown to uptown or into the city when they could take mass transit? If you live in parts of Queens or Staten Island where there aren't a lot of subways, you have to drive or take buses and sometimes, you know, not near a bus route. That I understand. But if you live where there is a subway, hey, it works.
report this morning that in a Senate appropriations bill in Washington, they put a line through the $2 billion for the train to the plane.
An on-running battle
between Republicans and Democrats.
Schumer's basically been carrying the water for the city in the Senate and Rangel in the House. I've talked to both, you know, multiple times each day. I've called senators and congressmen myself.
Story this morning that this is just bad blood between Republicans and Schumer.
I don't think that's fair to Chuck. I think there's a lot of partisanship. That's more fair. I don't know if it's Chuck personally. It's Democrats and Republicans. Each guy wants to settle old scores, and each party wants to settle old scores.
That's what's wrong with the process at the moment.
Yeah, I think so. And I've said that 1,000 times. Having said that, if we don't get it right now, I think in the new Congress, hopefully we will have we'll go back to the well and we'll try again. And one of these days, I'm still convinced we will get it. And incidentally, yesterday, you talk about this is federal monies. It's a trade-in of tax benefits that we got for the 9/11 tragedy. But yesterday, this city sold $2 billion worth of bonds to extend the number 7 line down the west side. This will be the first new subway in an awful long time. The city's paying for it, not the state. It should be the state doing it, but they didn't come through with the money. So
sell them all yesterday? One shot?
We were only going to sell $1.5 billion, and we sold $2 billion. The demand was so great, something like 4.7% cost to the city, which is a phenomenally good rate. We got an A rating, which says that the rating agencies think that this is a good project and will have a great future. This will open up the whole West Side. And we have to borrow more money. It's going to cost more than that, but you do it in stages. If you have mass transit, then the private sector will go in and will build.
Well, it certainly sounds like a good idea. What's happening to the there was a little brief story in one of the papers this morning about the High Line, the north of 30th Street, as part of that redevelopment? Because it's going to be a park south of 30th
Street. Yeah, I don't know what we're going to do with that. I saw the article in the paper.
Okay. All right. It's the half-hour mark. More with Michael Bloomberg. Also, we will be taking your phone calls if you want to get in the queue. 1-800-848-WABC. 1-800-848-WABC. All right, we'll be getting to you on the phones here in a little bit. Hang tight. Mayor Michael Bloomberg and John Gambling and you all here at 77 WABC. You were pretty vocal this week on the retirement, not one that was looked forward to, of John Bolton over at the UN.
There's two issues here. One, should the president or a governor or a mayor, whomever, an executive, have the right to pick their own representatives and assistants and advisors? If you want to hold them accountable, you got to let them have their own people. And first and foremost, it seems to me that the Congress couldn't be more wrong in denying Bolton the job, because this is who the president wanted. And the advice and consent that the Constitution gives the power to the Congress is the person qualified? Education, that sort of thing, not their own personal policies, nor should it be used as a referendum on the elected officials' policies. The public elected the president. President has his policies, like him or not. He has a right to his people, and John Bolton shouldn't have his own foreign policy. He was there to represent America. That's the first thing. Second thing is, I've always been a very big fan of the United Nations, which doesn't endear me to a lot of people who think it's crazy. I think I'd rather have people talking, even if they say stupid things, and a lot is said that I violently disagree with in the UN, but I don't see any argument not to have a forum where people keep talking. Maybe there's one in a trillion chance that they actually bring peace. It's a lot better than losing lives. And we can afford it, so why not try it? And Bolton's been trying to move the United Nations towards things that are pro-freedom-loving people around the world, pro-United States, pro-Israel, against terrorism. I thought Bolton was doing a great job. But the first and foremost reason I think this is a disgrace, other than the fact I think Bolton was doing a good job, the president has a right to have his own people.
Would you say that that is true for other positions, Secretary of Defense?
Absolutely.
Judges?
If you want to hold the executive responsible for – if he's got the responsibility, he's got to have the authority. Otherwise, it's a joke. And if you want to run foreign policy for this country, run for president, and then you have a chance to implement your own. Congress has some say. You can work your ways up there, too. That's fine. But to micromanage Congress couldn't be more wrong in doing this. It's a cheap political stunt done for local partisanship, and it's an outrage.
Well, the whole question of partisanship, which we'll table at the moment, but it's killing us. It's killing us all in so many quarters. Search down at the World Trade Center, is that still on? Is that an ongoing
Yes, we have finished the looking at the roofs of a couple of other buildings.
Manholes are all...
Now, we're still working on that. That'll take 6 months or a year more to do. We're digging a long trench where before we thought we'd just go down in different spots. But in looking at it, decided, well, it's not likely, but possibly, and we don't want to leave any space unsearched. The families, rightly so, say, hey, you know, the remains of my loved one could be there. So we want to do everything we, in a practical sense, can to assure that there are no other remains. Or if we find some, get them to the medical examiner so he can, his staff can try to identify them.
One of the casualties of 9/11 was the emergency command center down at the World Trade Center. A new one went into
operation. Opened a new one over in Brooklyn. It's keep in mind, we also have a backup one, which we don't divulge its location. Because you don't.
So it's not like you've been without one.
We've not been without one. And in fact, we've had two, the one we don't disclose and the one that was, there was one in an old building under the Brooklyn Bridge where I spent a few nights during the transit strike, as you remember. But this is in a building that formerly was the headquarters of the Red Cross, redone, Department of Design and Construction did a spectacular job. It's a place where we can pull all emergency responders and agencies, and everybody that has anything to do with any crisis we might have together. It's close enough to the water so you could get there by boat, which is important. It's high enough so that a flood won't take it out. I mean, a lot of things, when you think about siting, it has to be where there's plenty of power and line of sight for communications and that sort of thing. Yeah, I mean, I still think the most likely, God forbid we have a terrorist attack, but the most likely crisis that we will have to deal with is a hurricane or a big snowstorm. Two snowstorms when it's very cold, one on top of another. That's a very big problem. First time you plow the snow, second time there's no place to plow the new snow. If it's very cold, the snow doesn't melt with the salt and that sort of thing. But it's those kinds of power outage, not likely, but we've had them. We clearly had a citywide one and had a small one in one local area in Long Island City. So we've got to be able to make sure we can handle those kinds of crises, and we're trying to work. What do you do if a lot of people get sick from eating tainted food and, you know, or God forbid there's, an outbreak of communicable disease of some sort? And terrorism is always in the back of our minds.
In the back of one of the newspapers this week, I came across an item that shocked me, and I said, I got to ask the mayor about this. This is not directly related to New York City, though it is connected. It is the radio network that after 9/11 funds, federal funds, have moved into the state to create, and the state is paying some of it, and towns are paying some of it, and the federal government are paying some of it, to connect all first responders with a radio network. Almost $1 billion is being spent on this.
Well, we are spending, I have to get you the numbers. I'll try to do it.
The city obviously is part of
the city. We have a little bit of part of the state. The state one, remember, the state has this enormous geographical expanse to cover. And there's hills and mountains and that's like, I have no idea. Hevesy did a study of it. I suspect some parts in retrospect you could have done better. You can always do better with some of these things. What I'm more concerned about is the network that we're putting here in the city being paid for with city funds. We want, for example, every fire truck. It'd be great if the fire truck, the firefighters are about to run into a building, hit a button and see a floor plan. Download that kind of data. We already have put into every fire truck and ambulance in this city what's called an automatic vehicle locator. So the dispatchers just look on a moving map right in front of them, and they see where every fire truck and every ambulance is. And so they can dispatch the one that they know is closest, not the one they think is closest. And response times for ambulances have come down 25-odd seconds in the city. That's a very big percentage of what the response time is and can save lives.
Are you putting in the display in the fire trucks that you just described where they could find the floor plan?
That's the next step. The first thing is the fire truck, the electronics in the fire truck have to know where it is and report back. That part's in, and then the software that reads it all back at headquarters and displays it for the dispatcher. That part is done. We are working with all of those kinds of technologies. As a matter of fact, I saw a taxi cab the other day. which is part of this new. There's four vendors that are going to assume they all get through the next test. Every taxi cab will wind up with a kind of technology. You can swipe your credit card, pay by credit card. Moving map, you can see how the guy's getting you there. Messages, directories of hotels and restaurants and that sort of thing. The technology.
So you'll be able to know whether or not you're going in the wrong direction.
Absolutely right. I mean, you know, why shouldn't you in this day and age know? I was down in Florida to give a speech on education with Jeb Bush, the outgoing governor of Florida, who's really done a great job. Florida is, as a state, a real leader in this country in terms of trying new innovative things and accountability and responsibility and improving their school system. And one of the security guys, as we drove, I noticed they have a little portable GPS moving map. They just stick it on the windshield, and we went every place. The driver probably never been in Florida before, but you just follow the thing. The technology is wonderful.
It truly is. And to use that, I hadn't thought about that with the floor plans for the fire department and police as well, but it makes great sense.
Sure.
Absolutely wonderful. Let's hear. What do you say we go to the break, and when we come back, we got a full bank of phones.
Great.
We'll go to the folks out there, let them ask you the questions. We'll do that as we come back. 77 WABC. All right, each week we like to spend some time with you, let you ask the questions. We are going to start this morning with Mark out in Staten Island. Mark, you've got the mayor's ear. Go.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
I'm one of the many Staten Islanders who are very disappointed now that International Speedway Corporation has decided to pull out of Staten Island and New York City for now, ostensibly because they have not been able to get a single political figure to stand up and say that this is a good idea for Staten Island and New York City.
Well,
you're
100% right. Everybody on Staten Island, I kept looking for support. I talked at length to the Staten Island Advance over a period of a year and to all the elected officials. Everybody was against it. They all argue that traffic was the problem. My personal opinion is if people want to go to NASCAR, why not let them? I've always liked economic development in the city. But I will say I don't have any easy solutions for the traffic on Staten Island. The expressway is a big, long parking lot. And, hopefully somebody will build a NASCAR track locally, maybe over in the Meadowlands or something, which would be good for people that like NASCAR. Personally, I'm not a big NASCAR fan, but,
Millville, New Jersey, there's talk about one going in down there.
Anyways, I know you're disappointed. There were a lot of people disappointed, but you're in the minority over there.
Thank you, Mark. Let's see here. Let's go to Charles in Brooklyn. Charles, you've got Mr. Michael Bloomberg. Go ahead.
Hi. I live in the Bay Ridge area in Brooklyn. I'd like to know if there's anything we can do about getting the snow plows out quicker to the local streets when there's heavy snowfall.
Well, I thought maybe it snowed over there.
It's not snowing today over there. Funny thing is, you should ask, because last week our sanitation department went through a dry run, fortunately no snow, of getting snow plows out on the streets. And, every year we plan and make sure that we have enough snow plows, enough salt, enough sand, enough snow melters, and that what we try to do, Charles, is first do the main streets and then you work your ways down. And it depends on what time of the day and what day of the week, because it's a lot easier if you have a nighttime snowfall on a weekend when there's not a lot of traffic. It depends on how cold it is afterwards, because that'll tell you how quickly the snow melts. But so far, our sanitation department has done a spectacular job for the last five winters, and I care about them very much for the next three. And then I'd like to see it after that, but it's going to be somebody else's problem.
Let somebody else worry about the snowfalls. All right. Thanks for the telephone call. What do you say,
Chris?
John? You want to go to Chris?
Sure.
Okay. Chris in New Jersey. Go ahead, Chris.
Hi, Mayor Bloomberg. Listen, I'm going to put you on the hot seat. Okay, I happen to be a conservative Christian who lives out in New Jersey, and I want to encourage you to run for president, because I actually would consider voting for you, because despite your wealth, you display a remarkable sincerity, and you obviously care about what you do. And compared to some of the other potential candidates out there, you've proven that you can manage the city of New York, which is comparable to managing a state. So I encourage you to run. And the thing I would suggest doing to reach more people like me is to articulate a clear position on Israel and on national security. So sorry to do this to you, Mayor, but
no, that's all right. We only got a couple seconds, Chris. Number one, thank you for the nice words. I've tried to speak out on national issues where I can have a say, and really make a difference here. So immigration, because it affects the city, drugs, it affects the city, a lot of education nationwide affects the city, those kinds of things. And foreign policy, stay a little bit away from it, because my job is to represent all the people of New York City and not really to have my own foreign policy. It isn't that I don't have views, and I've always been a very big supporter, for example, of Israel. I think that, number one, and I want to be careful, I was criticized actually at a breakfast. I have a breakfast every year for Muslim New Yorkers as well, and one said you weren't being fair, and I thought they were right a little bit in that. It was very tragic what happened in Lebanon, but Israel has to defend itself. We all have to defend ourselves against terrorism, and I'm sort of a little more of a hawk on some of the stuff than some other people. But I think that this country has an obligation to help people around the world. One of the real problems with where we are today is America is a superpower, and it has responsibilities. And if, God forbid, we were called upon to defend people who are getting massacred elsewhere in the world, do we have the resources and the stomach to go and do that? That's one of the problems of being tied up in one part of the world. And goodness knows, there are places in this world where people are getting massacred, and I don't think that we're doing enough.
No, absolutely. Most countries are not doing enough in Darfur.
We go back and we say, oh, we should have done more to stop the Holocaust in the late 30s in Europe. Well, Darfur is another place where we haven't learned anything. We don't, unfortunately, it's a...
All right. Well,
anyways, Chris, thank you very much for the nice.
I think was the bottom line.
The bottom line is I'm going to be mayor for the next 3 years, but thank you.
All right. Where do you want to go next?
Let's go to John in Brooklyn.
John in Brooklyn, you've got the mayor. Go ahead.
Hey, gentlemen. Good morning. Mayor Bloomberg, Christmas gift for you on how to ease congestion.
Real fast, Johnny. Real fast.
Listen, London, they put cameras on major intersections. If you block that box, it takes a picture of your license plate and you'll mail the ticket.
John, we're running out of time. Let me tell you, you are 100% right. And the problem is we can't do the ticketing part. We can put up cameras. We can't do the ticketing part unless Albany would go along. And for reasons that defy any logic, Albany legislature refuses to give us the ability to have what we call red light cameras to people who run red lights.
Don't you?
We have 50 or 100. Right, you know how many intersections we have?
I understand.
And John, this is killing elderly people. Elderly people are a little bit slower when they cross the street, can't hear.
Little boy run over by the truck, ran a red light.
Yeah, I don't know. Was that
ran a red light.
Fine. Just that, you know, maybe call Albany and mention that young kid who's no longer going to go home to his family.
And why is that a state issue, real fast?
There's one, I forget, but I think the politics are there's one upstate influential member of the assembly who doesn't like red light cameras and thinks if we do it here, then they'll have to do it in his district or something. This is the outgrowth of the 70s when we sold our soul to Albany in return for a bailout financially. And we should be in control of our own destiny on things like what kind of parking tickets and whether we have congestion pricing, whether they have red light cameras and that sort of thing. Instead, we got to go up to Albany and beg all the time.
Makes no sense on the charter school issue as well.
Charter schools as well. Here are the greatest schools, chances to get good schools for more kids, more parental choice, and we've got to beg Albany for it.
All right, have a nice week, all right?
Stay
warm if you can. Mayor Michael Bloomberg exclusively right here. And coming up, we've got Chris Wallace, and we'll also talk to you about the things happening around the world. Please stay where you are.